Hey, everybody, and welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast on the face of the earth. I am one guy, Dan Leo, your A-host, and with me as always...
Another guy, Robert Mecki, the B-host.
Yes, and we've got a pretty good episode for you coming up. We'll be reviewing Bohemian Rhapsody,
oh yeah,
the Rami Malek Queen movie. You know it. You've heard of it. You probably saw it this weekend, considering how well it did at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just get right into it. We got the box office numbers coming in, and there are a few surprises. First of all, Bohemian Rhapsody, $51 million. That's stupid high amount of money.
That's
for
a
movie
of money.
That was okay.
It, thankfully, it's not Venom money.
Right, yeah. Venom was way worse of a movie and made way more money.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming in at number two, we had The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, coming in at a low but respectable $20 million.
This was the biggest surprise of the box office for me, because this I didn't expect anything from this movie. But
I think it's the only kids movie that came out this week, like the only thing that wasn't.
Yeah, that's true. But still, like, I didn't see a whole lot of marketing for it. It's not like The Nutcracker has a big fandom.
Oh, I saw a whole lot of marketing for it. Yeah, I think it was one of those, like, you know how Smallfoot was like the regal movie of the moment?
Oh,
The Nutcracker.
Okay.
Well, and also for you go to the Alamo Drafthouse and they don't let kids in there.
I'm so privileged.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't even think they were showing The Nutcracker at the Alamo Drafthouse.
Right, yeah. So if you don't allow kids in your movie theater, why would they show previews for that movie?
Yeah, that's a good point. Although, they did show... I saw The Incredibles 2 at the Drafthouse.
Well, that's different.
that's a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. A movie like The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, you are seeing it because you have children. Incredibles 2, I saw that with my roommate. And we had a good time.
Yeah. Like, if you're seeing The Nutcracker on your own just because you're that big of a fan of The Nutcracker as a franchise, you're probably the same type of person who has Mary Poppins posters hanging up in your bedroom.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. But
sure.
I don't have anything in common with you.
Yeah. we're all about alienating our audiences here.
Yeah. And then coming in at number three, Nobody's Fool, the first R-rated Tyler Perry movie, I believe.
What?
Yeah.
Really? He's never directed an R-rated movie before this?
Nope.
Wow. Actually, no, you're right. I do remember. This actually reminds me. Do you remember when The Happening marketing came out? And like the big thing for The Happening was like, it's M. Night Shyamalan's first R-rated movie.
Right, right, right.
I do remember seeing ads for this being like, it's Tyler Perry's first R-rated movie. And I'm just like, oh, this doesn't bode well.
Yeah, so it made a cool $13 million, probably made like $10 million more than its budget.
I don't know. I got
nothing really going on here. Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm very surprised at how, but I guess Queen is one of the most popular bands in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is by a major studio from a pretty, like, I think decently known director. Like, Bryan Singer's pretty prolific. I think a lot of people know his names. But I do think I was seeing a lot of marketing for this movie.
Yeah, me too. I think that was like a big part. And people were really ramping up, like, you know, because Rami Malek looks...
He looks like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah,
he's
as scrawny
like
as
more,
he is, but
he's
gets
more
pretty good.
Cut than Freddie Mercury, for sure.
Yeah, well, he's very angular, yeah. He's very skinny.
But I went back and watched the Live Aid concert on YouTube after I got out of this movie. And I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, shit. Rami Malek, like, I think actually looks better than Freddie Mercury does. And I mean, it's probably just his Hollywood diet and regimen and all that, but he's cut as fuck in this movie.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's also the Hollywood, like, Freddie Mercury was like kind of almost like ugly, like he was not ugly, but
he had
his
a very
talent
unique
superseded
look.
His looks. And you're like, wow, that is a unique guy.
Yeah. But yeah. So box office, I don't think it's terribly surprising. I think $50 million is actually a little bit lower than I was expecting for a movie this big, just because Queen is such a massive brand. I was expecting a lot of people to go see this regardless of the critics.
Right, yeah. And I wonder if the critics might have lowered the box office. Like, if this came out and was as well reviewed as A Star is Born, if it would have racked up like way more money.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what kind of legs this movie has, though.
Yeah, I'm wondering too, because my general consensus is that a lot of people like enjoyed it on the face, but I mean, it's really got some low points.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think that this movie is a crowd pleaser to the core. And yeah. So I think a lot of casual audiences are going to be like, yeah, it was a good time. It was totally fine. Like, I don't think there was anything offensively bad about this movie. And I do think that the critical consensus is actually a little bit harsh on it. But yeah,
it'll be good FX movie in like 3 years.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty standard for Fox.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
I can't wait to see the offensive. I want to see Freddie Mercury integrated into the MCU. Once Disney owns Fox at the beginning of next year.
I can't wait.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the highs and lows of the week. Let's start with the lows and then move our way into the highs, you know, so we end on a high note.
Oh, yeah.
So my low is that officially Tyler Perry is retiring the Madea character. And I have never seen a Madea movie and I don't plan on it, but I think having Madea in the cultural sphere is good overall.
That's a hot take, Dan.
Yeah, it's a hot take. I think Madea is hilarious as a concept that Tyler Perry, a closeted gay man, dresses up in drag for a series of movies that like they come out with one every year. I don't know. It's like it's insane. It's such a weird franchise idea.
How many years has this movie franchise been going on?
At least 50, I feel like.
Jesus Christ. The only Tyler Perry movie I've ever seen is Gone Girl.
Right. Yeah, I think me too.
Like, I've never had any desire to watch any other Tyler Perry movie. I know he tried to get into drama once, and apparently it was like that Alex Cross movie, and that movie was apparently really bad.
Yeah, well, he's not a bad actor, you know?
No, I don't think he is, but it's just he is... Nobody uses him correctly, and everything he does on his own is pretty hot trash. So yeah. I think that hopefully retiring this character is actually good for him, and maybe he'll like pull a Jim Carrey and try to branch out into more dramatic roles.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I would really, I don't know. I would like to see Tyler Perry expand. Okay, so the Madea character first was in a play called I Can Do Bad All By Myself. Oh, yeah. It came out in 1999. So has been going on for 19 years, almost 20 years.
Man, so this is like... Madea is like Harry Potter to some people out there.
Yeah. Oh, to some people. It's interesting. So it'll be sad to see her go, I think.
I mean, did you ever see her at all,
though? No.
Yeah, so.
But I liked having her around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, some movies aren't made for me, and I accept that.
Yeah, I know, but like, there are movies that aren't made for me. Like, there are good movies that aren't made for me. I don't know if any of the Madea movies would ever fall into that category, but
then why are there so many?
Because people are stupid and stupid movies make money. How is Michael Bay still a thing?
Right. If Transformers, okay. First of all, Michael Bay has made decent movies before. Secondly, the fact that
are you saying Michael Bay is better than Tyler Perry? Give me your hot take.
I'd say they're on par.
Okay. Maybe Michael Bay will take over. Maybe he'll start dressing up as Madea.
Oh, yeah, that would be... I think that might get him into hot water.
He doesn't give a shit.
Right, yeah,
exactly.
He's got
a wall of money to protect him.
Yeah. I think... So Transformers, right? And The Rock. Those are his two good
movies. I actually think Pain and Gain is his best film.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like that's so he's got like three good movies.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. And Bad Boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad Boys is pretty good. Argument.
Bad Boys is fun.
Yeah. He doesn't
that's
make.
Like, that's pretty peak Bay, I would argue.
Right. There's like no other things that I would want to watch from him.
Yeah. You don't want to watch Armageddon on loop over and over again?
Armageddon is a hilarious movie.
Have you ever seen the commentary
for Armageddon. By Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Where Ben Affleck roasts the movie.
Yeah, it's so fucking good. Anybody listening that hasn't heard that yet, look up Ben Affleck Armageddon commentary on YouTube because it's hilarious.
Yeah, honestly, I think if they just put one astronaut with him, I think it makes sense that they would send a bunch of...
Right?
Yeah, that makes sense. But training them to do math...
Like any astronaut can operate a drill. Like, Ben Affleck puts it perfectly. You point it at the ground and you flip a switch. Like...
And I'm sure there's some oil drillers listening to this podcast right now saying, you guys don't get how complicated it is. And I say, we don't.
If we are reaching an audience of oil drillers right now, I am very proud of our outreach. I'm very happy with that. And right. If you have any nuanced takes on our oil drilling, please send us send Brian Williams a comment. Tell him how to drill.
Oh, Brian Williams knows how to drill, baby. Drill, baby, drill. That's what he's got tattooed across his chest. I can't tell you why I know that.
Drill into the truth.
Yeah. Drill into the truth. All right. So that's Madea. Let's go into the, what did you want to call this middle? We got the high lows and.
Yeah, it's a toss up. We don't know how this is going to turn out yet. Just like the 2018 midterm elections.
Oh, yeah. This is actually our special election episode where we are doing this podcast as the results are coming in. So
yeah. So if I start crying halfway through the podcast,
that means Ted Cruz is back.
Yeah.
Did you see?
God, he's going to kill more people.
I'm Colbert. That he's going to kill more. Somebody's got to stop him. The Zodiac killer. He can't keep getting away with it.
Why do we keep enabling him?
Yeah. Oh, man, he looks like a Dracula candle that's been melted a little bit.
It's like just left in a car for too long and it didn't even melt. Nobody ever lit it. It just like got shorter and like more plump.
Yeah. And you're like, I guess this still works, but
yeah,
I'll put it in the bathroom so no one can really see it.
Yeah. It smells like shit.
We'll keep you all updated on that. Sure. I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably know how it all turned out.
That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. So if the secret police come in while we're doing this, then you know there will be a recording of it. Hopefully the secret police don't know how to delete Audacity files.
Oh, this is going straight to the cloud, baby.
Right. Ooh, fancy. Is it?
I will not be suppressed.
All right, so the toss-up is they're going to reboot Shrek, which I read further into it, and it looks like they're trying to get everybody back together. So it's not like a reboot. It's
It's a relaunch.
Right. It's like just Halloween. More. Yeah. Same actors. Because I can't imagine Shrek without Mike Myers. I feel like what's the point in that?
Yeah, Shrek without Mike Myers would be the only person. I could see them pulling a Hellboy and getting like David Harbour to voice Shrek in their reboot.
Interesting. Yeah.
Which I would be actually pretty okay with.
I was going to say that I feel like Mike Myers is so instrumental. Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, like are so instrumental in the success of Shrek that I can't imagine them. Like, I can't imagine. It's not a concept heavy
story. No.
You know, it's very much reliant on the performances, I feel like.
I agree. And I think they've become so iconic in their roles that it would just be kind of a betrayal to the Shrek fan base if they were to recast those iconic characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, Mike Myers needs the work. Like, give Mike Myers a paycheck.
Yeah.
Hopefully he gets some good royalties from Bohemian Rhapsody.
Hopefully. Oh, yeah. He does have a nice cameo role in that.
It was quite fun. He pulls a real Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, except way not as funny.
Yeah, that's true.
He has like
Tom Cruise's performance is legendary in Tropic Thunder.
Oh yeah, I feel like Mike Myers in this movie is pretty weird. Like, I don't know why he's trying to fake
an accent too.
Yeah, well, I don't, because he's Canadian. His dad was British.
Mm.
So I think there is some kind of accent in there.
So he faked his accent for Shrek.
Yes.
You have shattered my reality.
Right. Mike Myers is not Scottish.
Why the fuck did they make Shrek Scottish?
So apparently I actually know the story on this. Is that
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah, so Mike Myers recorded the entire thing straight. and then had this idea like, what if he was Scottish? I think it might be funnier. And so he went back and he re-recorded all of his lines for the movie in a Scottish accent for free. Because he thought it would work better.
Oh, my God. I actually do know a little bit about this. I remember that Chris Farley was supposed to be Shrek.
Yeah, they have lines of him.
Before his unfortunate passing. But yeah, it's weird. Like, I've listened to the Shrek lines before by Chris Farley, and it's not Shrek to me. And it just sounds
so
off. It's
a lot sadder, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays it weirder.
Man, I wonder, like, what the fuck are they gonna? Is it just like a complete reboot of the story too? Because like they have like four or five sequels or whatever.
I honestly have not seen any of the ones past Shrek 2.
I really hope, well, because Shrek 2 is great, so you don't need to watch anything else. But I really hope they pull a Halloween and they reboot it. And they're like, oh yeah, all those rumors you heard about the other movies, they're just fairy tales.
Just fairy.
Oh man. I hope that's what they do. I think that's the way to relaunch Shrek.
I think Shrek is on Netflix right now. And I tell you what, I watched it pretty recently and it holds up pretty well.
It does. Like, that is a good movie. The humor is great. It's not just like LOL random. And it's like, it's actually a really smart subversion of a lot of the fairy tale tropes.
Oh, yeah. And John Lithgow as Lord Farquaad, Cameron Diaz. Oh, man. It's great. A-list cast. You don't see movies like that anymore.
Yeah.
With like Lord real Fortnite. A-list cast.
It's so good. I really do hope that the Shrek reboot is good and that another generation can experience the meme that is Shrek.
I was reading somebody said like Smash Mouth should curate the soundtrack like Kendrick Lamar did for Black Panther.
Oh my God, dude. I'm going to buy the relaunched Shrek on vinyl and I hope it's just like this disgusting green color with like the outline of Shrek's head on it.
Ugh, yeah.
I want it.
Oh, that'll be so great when it eventually happens. Because it'll make millions of dollars.
Shrek Daddy.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move into our highs then. Let's. You want to do your high first?
Yeah. So the only high news that I had for this week is that Ewan McGregor is joining the Birds of Prey film, which doesn't seem like a high at first because I think not a lot of people have a lot of faith in DC's universe. Especially after Suicide Squad and considering this is a spinoff of Suicide Squad. But the director has come out.
But it's one of the best parts of Suicide Squad.
But the director has come out and said that she's confirmed that it's a hard R rating. For Birds of Prey. Yeah. And Ewan McGregor is playing Black Mask, who is a super fun Batman villain that I think could work really well in this film. It's all hoping that it's good. Like, that's all that really matters is that it's a competent film, that it's not another Suicide Squad or a Justice League.
Yeah, tell us about Birds of Prey and more specifically Black Mask. Like, what's going on there? Because I don't know anything about him.
Black Mask is basically, like, he's a normal dude that just wears a black mask on his face. And he's also really good at naming, yeah.
he's very clever.
So clever. But he's like a mafioso type character. But he owns some of the biggest industries in Gotham. So he's essentially like he's not like evil Batman because he doesn't have the same skill set Batman does, but he has almost infinite resources, which makes him just like he's got infinite resources and essentially a corrupt police force. So I guess you could call him like DC's Wilson Fisk. I think that'd be a good way to put it. So if they do this right, and you know, Ewan McGregor's a great actor. I think he could bring a lot to this character.
Definitely.
So if they do it right, if they nail it, I think this could be really cool.
And so Birds of Prey, that'll be Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. And who else is going to be in that?
I don't know if they've cast Birds of Prey is supposed to be the Huntress, Poison Ivy, sometimes Batgirl, and Harley Quinn. And the only person I know cast so far is Harley Quinn, which is Margot Robbie. I don't know if they've cast the other female leads yet.
Right, because Huntress was not in
Suicide Squad, no.
Right. Yeah, so they got to do Poison Ivy. And then do you think they're going to have... Because Batgirl is Barbara Gordon, right? Commissioner Gordon's daughter?
Yeah. Which...
So that would be interesting if they cast her.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I want them to do? I want them to cast her in this... Have her as Batgirl in Birds of Prey, And then do a Killing Joke live action adaptation where she gets paralyzed and then becomes Oracle and, you know, teams up with Batman, becomes Batman's IT support.
That could be a good, like, for the Batman movie, the Matt Reeves one.
Oh, yeah. Because, and like, oh, that'd be so cool. Because the what I really hope the Batman movie does is they teased it in Batman vs. Superman that Jason Todd, I think it's Jason Todd. I don't remember if Zack Snyder came out and said Jason Todd or Dick Grayson, but one of the Robins was murdered by the Joker. Like, they confirmed that in Batman vs. Superman with, like, the Robin costume in the Batcave with, like, Joker spray paint on it.
Yeah, I feel like that's got to be Jason Todd. Like, I feel like...
Yeah, I mean, if they're going by the comics, it should be. And, like, I want to see that because I feel like that's also, you know, it's implied that that's what pushed Batman to start just straight up murdering people in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah.
So I want them to dig deeper into that. Like, I want the Batman solo film to be prequel that's about his descent into madness and cruelty that he presents in Batman vs. Superman. I think that's character development we need for this universe.
Yeah, definitely. Because showing that character progression, especially, like, it's hard to... I feel like all of the Batman movies, very few of them have delved into his relationships with people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you've got, oh, Rachel, whatever, and you go a little bit...
Rachel, whatever. Exactly.
Yeah. And you've got a little bit of the... what's the cat girl? What's...
Oh, Selina Kyle?
Yeah, what's the her character's name?
Catwoman,
duh. Well, I'm so stupid.
Catgirl?
Cat lady.
Yeah.
Like, they really haven't delved into these long-term relationships, because they're always meeting each other for the first time, and it's not like...
Yeah, it's always an origin story.
Yeah, I just want, like, go right in. He's already got a Robin. It's Jason Todd, and so we're all like, oh, we know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Dude, and if or even like Tim Drake. Red it's Hood, only been Dick Grayson.
Oh, yeah. Give me, like, a Nightwing movie, and then give me a Red Hood movie, like a hard R Red Hood movie where he's just straight-up vigilante murdering people.
Yeah, a Red Hood, and, like, yeah.
Man, if this movie actually comes out and is rated R, but is still part of the DC universe, I feel like that could be massive because it could signal such a shift in DC's view of their cinematic universe properties. Because if they're not afraid to go hard R on the stories that deserve it, I think that could change everything. And that could be the real differentiator between them and Marvel, which is something I think they wanted to do, but they just kind of half-assed it for like their first five films. And if you go back and watch, like, Batman vs. Superman, the director's cut that they released on Blu-ray, which I think is totally worth watching, is rated R. Because Batman is fucking brutal in that, and it's also... They focus so much more on just the ruthlessness of the villains, like Lex Luthor, and what Batman's markings actually mean for the people that he captures and sends to prison.
Yeah, I think a hard R superhero universe would be amazing.
God, I want it so bad. If DC's the one to bring it, man, I will forgive them for, like, Justice League and Suicide Squad. And right, I think a lot of it, too, is driven probably by the hype that's surrounding their solo Joker movie, because I'm pretty sure they confirmed that to be rated R, too.
Oh, really?
I thought. Which is another... But that's like a standalone film. So...
Yeah, I have no idea what the continuity is all this.
Yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
DC doesn't know what they're doing. I think they're still trying to figure it out. But they did also, they pushed Wonder Woman 1984 to like 2020, I think, which is pretty big because they only have Shazam slated right now for 2019. And that seems out of character. So I wonder if they're slotting something else into that initial Wonder Woman release slot. But I don't know.
Very interested to see.
Yeah.
Very interested. Oh, well, we will find out. Let's see. Let's go on to the very last high. Is that It Chapter 2 has finished filming, so we're going to be getting it soon. I think it's like September 2019. I'm pretty excited. I really like the first one. I just bought the book, so I gotta plow through that and try and finish it. It is so big. Like, I remember it being gigantic, and it is gigantic.
Yeah, it's like George R. R. Martin levels.
Yeah. I've not read a book this size in a while.
It is a horror epic, which is something I don't think you get a lot of other than from authors like Stephen King.
Oh, yeah.
But because it spans such a large time frame.
It's a lot more like time jumps already. Like, got through the, like the first chapter and it's like, oh yeah, now we're going to a different time. And I'm like, oh, interesting.
Oh yeah, it jumps back and forth. That's not something the movie does, but I think in the book it works a lot better because it adds even, I think, a more ominous feel to know like the fate of certain characters before going back and seeing how they reacted as kids.
Yeah.
But man, yeah, it is so good. I cannot wait for chapter 2. The cast sounds amazing. I can't wait for a trailer. And the thing about it too that I'm so fascinated with is that you can't have the simple jump scares and like aesthetic jump scares that you did in the first one.
Yeah.
Because like adults usually just aren't as afraid of things like they are when they were kids. Like, I don't know. The kids, it's so much easier to scare them with a spooky image, but adults are like, fuck, did I not file my taxes this year or something?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's going to have more psychological fuckery. You know?
Yeah. And I'm very excited. I am so into this. I cannot wait. Also, small side note, the director of it, Andy Muschietti, which is his actual name. I didn't make that up.
Yeah, no, that's real. Yeah. It's not one of your Italian blasphemies.
Andy Maggiano's. Yeah. he is directing the Attack on Titan live action adaptation, which I am okay with.
Andy's also going to be doing Time Machine with H.G. Wells' Time Machine.
Well. And Leonardo DiCaprio, right?
Yeah, Leo's going to be in it.
Man, the only Time Machine movie I've seen is that one from like the mid-2000s that's kind of fucking weird.
Oh, and yeah, I forgot about that.
I've never read the story, so I'm curious to go in pretty blind to this movie. Plus, like, Leo in a Time Machine movie?
Everybody loves Leo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm into it. I'm waiting for it. I'm excited for Bill Hader, James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain. All good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Bill Skarsgård is back. I wish Tim Curry could have a cameo, but rough.
Yeah. Is he alive?
I believe he's still alive, but he is not in great health.
Oh, yeah? Really? Yeah. How old is he?
Let's find out.
He is 72.
Yeah. So he's not terribly old, but he's also... I don't know if he'd be up for this.
Have you seen the TV version?
Yeah, with Tim Curry and Seth Green.
Oh, Seth Green is in it?
Yeah, Seth Green plays one of the kids in the child story.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I've never seen the TV version. Is the TV version good?
The TV version is decent. It's not great. I think the movie is better, but it's iconic to me because I saw it when I was 5 and my grandfather was watching it and he told me to come in and watch this movie with him because he said it was about a clown. So I had no idea what I was going into. And then it just kind of traumatized me for life. Like I vividly remember scenes from that movie just because I saw it when I was so young and it was horrifying.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, it made me like I didn't even want to stare at like still photographs for too long because I thought they would like, you know, come to life and I would fucking see Pennywise in the background somewhere.
Oh, yeah. None of that. That's gross. Ooh. Yeah.
But I think it's worth watching just for Tim Curry's performance.
Yeah. Oh, so it looks like in July 2012, Curry suffered a major stroke. And as a result, he uses a wheelchair now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure they could work some sort of cameo in for him. But I feel like that would also be it would be too much of a wink at the camera. I feel like.
Yeah, everyone would know. And I feel like the tone this is taking is pretty serious. So,
yeah, this is not these movies aren't really self-aware. And I think they're better for it.
Definitely. Yeah, they play it real straight.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I am hyped.
Me as well. All right. Well, let's get into the review of the week. This week, it's Bohemian Rhapsody, the story of Queen and Freddie Mercury, starring Rami Malek as the titular character.
Yeah, Bohemian. Yeah,
as Queen, as Freddie Mercury. It's, it's directed by Bryan Singer. I feel like we have to have the Bryan Singer talk. Because it colors everything that he does. So if you don't know anything about Bryan Singer, he is consistently accused of having a penchant for young men. very like a lot of Kevin Spacey-esque allegations towards him.
Pedophilic?
That's the real question. That's what the rumor has always been, but it's, I don't think it's ever gone that far. I think it's always been like, oh, he's, you know, I don't know if he's openly gay, but it's,
I'm pretty sure he's openly gay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always been kind of like an open secret that he has a penchant for like young men. And the rumor is with, I feel like it's in Hollywood in general about the pedophile rings and all that.
Yeah.
Just that Bryan Singer has a penchant for younger men and has been accused of non-consensual sexual contact with them. And apparently Esquire is working on a expose about Bryan Singer. And
I will be curious to read that.
Yeah. I mean, part of me is kind of like, I don't think Bryan Singer is good enough, like a good enough director for me to be like, oh, separate the art from the artist. You get like a very,
he's not Roman Polanski.
I mean, yeah. Like Roman Polanski's made some pretty fantastic like movies that you can say like, okay, take these away from the context.
His crimes,
and they're still pretty great.
Yeah.
This, for these, you know, it's like, oh, The Usual Suspects, pretty great. The X-Men movies, X-Men 1 and X2 are pretty great. Superman Returns, okay. Valkyrie is surprisingly good.
I like Valkyrie. I'm a defender of Valkyrie. I think the funniest part about that movie is the fact, though, that everybody's doing a German accent except Tom Cruise.
No, people are doing Brit. Like the, all right, accents in movies. I'm gonna, if you're playing a different character, who cares what accent you're using? Everyone else, like, honestly, they're German accents. They're not speaking fucking German. Why even try to do it?
If you're gonna change the language, I prefer you just do it in an American accent, so that way it sounds natural. Like that was like the big problem I had with Red Sparrow, that Jennifer Lawrence movie that came out, where she was doing a weird Russian accent the entire time. And it's like, don't do this. You're not speaking Russian.
Well, it's like, even I get if you're doing like that, if you're like, oh, I'm evoking, like, I'm like, I don't care. Like, so if it's like your Russian accent is like shitty, I'm like, I don't know if I really care that much. Like the fact that Tom Cruise was like, I'm just not going to do an accent. And they're like, but you're playing someone German. It's like, yeah, I'm not speaking German either, idiots. Like,
yeah,
because there are people in that movie doing English accents, like just blatantly. I'm like, yeah, just do your own
like
thing.
Kenneth Branagh. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many like famous British actors in that movie. Oh, that is like a very tense, like that's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
I'll stand by that.
Yeah, I think it is a pretty tense movie. I think Bryan Singer is a solid director, and I think that he is, or I would say he was, very culturally influential for the time being. I think that time frame is past now. Like, I don't think Bryan Singer, like there used to be a time when you could attach his name to anything and people would go see it.
Right. But
ever since, you know, like I think post Superman Returns, probably he just hasn't had that, you know, staying power, that influence that he used to with X-Men 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And Usual Suspects.
Oh yeah. And one House too. We forget about House, but he like created it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he was at least he was like an executive producer. Like he was a big, he wrote and directed, or no, he directed the pilot. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, I do think he's a good director. I never, like, there are a couple movies of his I haven't seen and that I also just don't like. Like, I didn't like X-Men Apocalypse. I thought that movie was pretty shit.
Yeah, no, the movie's not good. Yeah.
I hear Jack the Giant Slayer is pretty bad.
I believe it.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch it to find out. But I think for the most part, getting into the actual discussion of the movie at hand, his skill to direction does come through. And I think that more so in style, I think, than like pacing. But this movie, at the very least, I think looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, it looks good. And it's very, to me, kind of the opposite of what like Queen, like it gets the aesthetics of it down,
yeah,
but really doesn't have anything to fill it out. I felt like a lot of the movie was kind of boring, actually. Like I felt like a lot in the middle kind of dragged, and the musical segments kind of felt like glorified music videos, which
that could be a good thing or
a bad thing.
Yeah. And that's, I think, why I go back to calling this movie, like, it is the definition of a crowd pleaser, because there's so much focus on the creation of such iconic songs And like, they devote pretty much like almost like a third of the movie to the Live Aid concert, which is a good sequence. I had a great time watching that sequence. And just like, you know, the direction is great. The performance is great. You can tell that everybody playing the Queen members are really getting into it and having a good time performing.
Yeah, the Live Aid sequence is the best in the movie, I think.
I agree. I think everything in between, the genesis of like We Will Rock You or like any of their other iconic songs is kind of boring. And it feels like such a shame because Freddie Mercury is such this interesting, complex human being that I feel like got kind of shafted by his adaptation in this film.
Yeah, they really make him out to be kind of a bad guy.
So here's the thing is I know Queen, what like the band members themselves were producers of this film. And yeah. I think that hurt it a lot.
Definitely.
Like
100%.
I'll go back to the Sacha Baron Cohen was attached to this project forever. And he wanted to make like this hard R, this like super outrageous, super like edgy, super sensual Freddie Mercury biopic. And that's what I wanted to see. And that is not what you're going to get going into this movie.
Yeah. Which if you don't know anything about Sacha Baron Cohen in terms of his singing, like he has perfect pitch. He
was in Les Mis.
Yeah, no. For his audition on Sweeney, he's in Sweeney Todd too. For his audition for Todd, he sang the entirety of Fiddler on the Roof. Man. In like perfect pitch.
Dude, why didn't we get that movie? It makes this movie seem worse, I think, than it is because of the missed opportunity of Sacha Baron Cohen's Freddie Mercury movie.
And that's really what I feel like this movie is kind of a lost opportunity because Rami Malek is not bad. Like he brings it. You always feel like he's there and everyone else is kind of like reacting off of him. And like the guy playing Brian May is actually like pretty good. He's got Brian May like spot on, but everyone always seems to be kind of reacting to his performance in a pretty contrived storyline that is all over the place, kind of. I never really got a good vibe for who Freddie was, and they really make him to be kind of like partway through the movie, probably about halfway, it's like, oh, this guy is like really dumb, and he just doesn't like it starts making him seem like someone who couldn't make good decisions and was just fucking everything up. When in reality, like
Queen what they were.
Yeah. Queen is, you know, like the fact that has Queen released music without Freddie Mercury? You know,
nah.
I think like Freddie had one solo album, like, and all the other ones like created solo albums too. But it's just like they're all great songwriters, but clearly it is Freddie Mercury who is like the heart and soul of it.
Yeah,
and they really kind of treat him more of a caricature of himself than like a living, breathing person.
Yeah,
and we're supposed to fill in for the bandmates of kind of be like, oh, this guy's a little like nutty, right? It's like, no, fuck, like, no, he's got his own issues, but you guys are also crazy people too. And they the way the band comes off is like straight laced family men, like, oh, well, we gotta go, Freddie, like, sorry,
right?
And not like partying their asses off. I'm like, this is a little like it's making them look
weird.
Too good.
Yeah, it was such a sanitized version of the Queen story, and. It like you put it pretty well where it's a caricature of Freddie Mercury. It feels like this is Queen's version of Freddie Mercury. And it's just rough because he deserves so much more than it. And I think there are moments in the movie where you kind of start to see like the complexity of Freddie Mercury as a man, but they never really hang on to them. They don't develop those moments long enough to make it memorable. Like, I think that I like the scenes where you see him like being sad and like trying to reckon with like the loneliness that comes with fame. But
yeah,
there's such fleeting moments.
Yeah, exactly. And it really didn't delve in too much on the creative processes. Like,
these songs
another one
just
bites
happened.
The dust.
All these fucking songs happened like in one afternoon at the studio.
And they're like, oh, what? I'm so bored. Like, what should we do? It's like, I want to make a song that people can play. Like,
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what is that? Are you going with that? Or the one where, like, it's another one bites the dust. They're all, like, fighting. And then suddenly, like, the bass is just, like, hitting up the bass line.
Right, and
it's
like that's pretty good. Let's make that a song.
Yeah, let's make that a song. Quick cut to another montage. Like, this movie loved montages.
Oh, yeah.
Which the montage is like the staple of every like musical biopic, but in this one it's just like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's,
like I get there are moments, and like when you're making a movie about a story as vast as like the history of Queen, I get that you're gonna need montages somewhere. But I do think that they overused them, and they also just like, even when they didn't use a montage, they glossed over, I think, such pivotal moments in the band's history. Like the way that they the way that they portrayed the band forming felt like a student film. It's like,
oh, what? Yeah. It's like, oh, Freddie Mercury is following them around, and it's like, oh, this guy just left. And it's like, oh, what are you get? The, I'll say the lip syncing is actually not that, not as bad as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But it's still like, how you can so tell it's lip syncing.
You can tell
and
it's lip syncing.
That kind of takes it out a little bit, but
I do think it's interesting that they didn't actually use Freddie Mercury's voice for the vocals in the film. What they did is they actually mixed Rami Malek's voice with a Freddie Mercury impersonator. I forget his name, but apparently he's like legendary within the music community for being able to hit the vocal range that Mercury actually hit. So they just combined those two tracks for most of the songs in that movie, which I think was good because I think there were moments like when they were performing where I would watch them and be like, you know what, that doesn't sound like they just modulated a studio recording of Queen. Like it actually sounds like it doesn't sound like he was doing it live on set, but it doesn't sound like they just grabbed a studio track either. So I was pretty confused throughout the film. So I looked it up afterwards and I was like, oh, they mixed Malek's voice with a impersonator's voice and ended up with this result.
So some of these sounds were Rami Malek actually.
Yeah. Yeah, because he can actually sing. And I think like you were telling me that Malek actually had to perform before he got this role.
Yeah, he had to watch. He like performed it like a tape and he had to like watch the members of Queen listen to him perform Queen songs.
Which has got to be so fucking nerve wracking. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, but also, I mean, knowing what I know now, fuck them. Like, who cares? Like, obviously they make bad decisions. Like,
but they want history to reflect them as being the only good decision makers.
I was like, fuck them. I feel like Queen makes bad like decisions. And overall, my experience from this movie is like, what a missed opportunity. Because it's not a bad movie by any regards.
Yeah.
It's just it feels like an empty tribute where the Live Aid sequence is so good that it belonged in a different movie.
Yeah.
And it had such emotional like resonance. I see why they set it up that in real life, Freddie Mercury did not get his AIDS diagnosis until 2 years after Live Aid.
Yeah.
And this, they really frame this performance as like a comeback and like they're all getting back together. But really, they
never broke up.
They never broke up. There was never like a big issue. And so it seems like they were more about creating a pretty bland movie arc than rather telling like Freddie's story. Because nobody cares about the people who are not Freddie Mercury.
Right. The only I only know Brian May's name. I still don't know the names of the other two members, even after watching this movie.
Yeah, exactly. I really do not care about that. And the movie ends up being pretty serviceable. I think you get good performances out of everybody. It's just the pacing is off and really everything seems kind of contrived the way they're like, we got to get experimental.
Oh, yeah.
Cut to them getting experimental.
Right.
And doing all this stuff. And like, there are better ways to show genius, especially musical genius, in a way that doesn't come off that contrived. And they just pick the most like, well, we got to play the hits, right? It's like, we'll get to writing those hits.
Such this fucking basic conflict too between like Mike Myers as the studio or as the record label owner and the band members, where he's just this caricature. Like one, his character, I forget his name in the movie, but that character just never existed. He wasn't a real person. He was just there to provide like a point of conflict for the band members as the voice of reason, quote unquote, by saying like, oh, we got to play the hits, like nothing over 3 minutes. Bohemian Rhapsody is never going to be big.
And it's like, we already know it's big. Cut the shit. Like,
yeah.
Stop trying to make this a movie where we're all in on your stupid joke. Like, just make a movie talking about Freddie Mercury. And they do like good jobs at some point. I think it really relies on Rami Malek. Without him being as good as he is, this movie comes up as hot garbage.
Yeah, he definitely elevates this movie above what it would be without his performance. And I think that to me, this movie really just feels like, it just feels like a love letter to Queen, which I think is fine in a lot of context. I think that, yeah. I mean, this movie really did feel like it, one of its purposes, I am sure, was just to generate more sales and more streams of Queen in 2018, which I think totally works. I'm sure Queen is going to be topping the charts again. I know I've been listening to Queen a lot more ever since I saw this movie, because like,
oh, yeah.
There's no denying that their songs are so iconic. And I think you could probably make an argument for like either them or the Beatles of being like the most iconic band of modern times.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But yeah, like, As a whole, I wanted so much more from this film. And I feel like going back to the whole, like the way they framed the Live Aid concert as like Freddie's like final act of goodwill after learning that he contracted AIDS was so contrived. And I feel like it takes away from his actual experiences of learning that he has AIDS. I wish that like this movie felt like it needed a third act in the last 20 minutes, which was just him like learning that he has AIDS and then doing the Rite Aid, the Live Aid concert, where I was really hoping that it was going to focus a lot more on him dealing with learning that he's like, he has a limited amount of time left, but he still wanted to perform and be as flamboyant and extravagant as he was previously. But you never really got that like internal conflict in this movie. You just kind of see like, oh, he learned that he has AIDS, and then he's going to go do this big concert, and then it's going to end, and they're going to like, you know, give a text explanation of what actually happened to him and his husband or his lover. I don't actually know. I don't think they ever got married. Did they?
I don't think. No, it was not allowed.
Yeah.
In 91.
Yeah.
But it ends in, you know, Live Aid is what, like 85, and Mercury died 6 years later.
Yeah.
And also, Another One Bites the Dust came out in 1980. Yeah. And it's picked as like the last song. It's like, what timeline is going? It's like they're talking about disco and literally it's 1980 fucking five. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Do you think that we're all this stupid that we can't put together a timeline? Like, yeah. It's a hodgepodge. It's not even, it really feels like they had Queen's greatest hits and they're like, hey, just make a movie where you put all these songs in.
Exactly what happened.
It felt more like Across the Universe than the actual like,
yeah,
Queen biopic.
At least Across the Universe didn't pretend like it was telling the story of the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. It was telling a different type of story. And yeah, that's what I feel like this is. It just, it doesn't come off as very authentic.
Mm. I completely agree. And it's a bummer because I think that Rami Malek could have like, okay, well, I think he does give an authentic performance.
Yeah,
it's just that
he's good.
The character, the movie as a whole, wasn't written authentically. And even like, I would have been fine if Sacha Baron Cohen had just like, you know, directed the film starring Rami Malek, because I really do think Rami Malek is fantastic in this role. I think he completely disappears into it. And it's crazy to walk out of this movie and then think this is the same guy playing Mr. Robot.
Oh yeah, exactly. Someone who's like a schizophrenic and paranoid,
mm-hmm.
and you get this like very soulful, intimate portrait of him.
Yeah,
but it just feels like it feels like Freddy is trapped in his own movie. That he's like, why am I in this? And everyone's like, because you're a legend, Fred. And he's like, but I'm a person. Yeah. They're like, shut up. Like,
yeah, he's like, why are you in this? Because we have some bones to pick with you, and we can't do it anymore. So we're gonna do it in this movie.
Right. My therapist is charging more, so instead we're gonna make this weird movie where you're the bad guy and I'm the good guy and has a real stable relationship with my wife, even
right?
though
that
I cheat on her.
That was
all
the weirdest
time.
Thing. That was the weirdest thing, is like how they like it was clearly the band's creative call to be like, yeah, the rest of us are all like solid family men. We're all faithful to our wives. We're not going to party too hard. We're going to leave parties. We're not going to do drugs. And then Freddie Mercury is the one like snorting coke off the table, which is another thing I think they kind of glossed over. Like there's like one hint of his substance abuse, like that shot of coke on the table. And then they just never bring it up again.
Right. I mean, it's like, I don't know, you know, like how people are. There are people who don't have substance abuse problems that do coke. It's just like, And so they're just like, oh wow, this like rock star does like cocaine. I'm like, all right, like who cares? Like,
but it's the fact that they set it up as like a big problem for him that's just solved without any action on his part.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's doing like an unknown amount of coke. Could be like good or bad. Oh, and he's also doing a lot of gay stuff, which is obviously bad. And he's showing up to band practice late and kind of like high. And everyone else is stone cold sober, ready to work.
Right.
And
yeah. Like there's no fucking way that ever happened. Like,
And it's like, they really treat Freddy as kind of someone who, like, the only reason he's in the band is because he's like
he's
necessary.
So good at singing.
Yeah, he's so good at singing. It's like, well, if it wasn't for the fact that you're a once in a generation talent, we would have kicked you out of the band. It's like, fuck you guys. You would have been nothing. You would have been, you know, some boring ass band. Like,
you'd still be playing College Towns.
Yeah, really. You'd be doing worse than they'd be. I mean, I do like they have a moment when Freddy's like, you'd be doctor of astrophysics, Brian May. Yeah. And it's like, I don't even know what you'd be a dentist. And I don't even know what you'd be. And he's like, I'm an electrical engineer.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. I wish there was more of that. And like it really did it feel at times that Queen was trying to like use this movie to reframe themselves as like a straight edge band.
Yeah. When it's like, we all know. Yeah, they're trying to push all of the vice on New Freddy and absolve themselves.
Yeah. God. And yeah, I also wish that like there like I feel like there's not enough of a focus on Freddy's like his homosexuality in this film. Like it's a subplot to me in this film where I feel like it was clearly a driving force in his life, I'm pretty sure. And like he became a gay icon because of it.
Yeah.
But all we really get is like we get one homosexual kiss in this film and they're not even naked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's totally. I mean, it's my same critique on that I have with that other gay movie, Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah. I wanted full penetration.
Well, a movie about a gay guy and it's not very gay. It seems like if Freddie Mercury were straight, that you would have bet there would have been a like intense love scene with his lover and whatever.
Oh my god, know? Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, because he's gay, like, oh, people aren't ready. It's like, yeah, we are. Come on.
Like you saw more skin from the girl that he ended up quote unquote marrying than, and I know she was like actually a pretty big part of his life, and he left like half of his wealth to her after he died. But it's so weird to me that in a movie about Freddie Mercury, you see her naked more than you see any of his lovers.
Yeah, it seems.
Again, just very sanitized. Like this is it. This movie, like the Fox execs know exactly what audience this is playing to. And I would be curious to see the type of movie Bryan Singer would have directed if he didn't have to adhere to Queen and Fox's standards.
Yeah, I really wonder. I have no idea. I have no idea if Bryan Singer would have that much creative control, like creative input outside of that.
I still think more about Sacha Baron Cohen's version. Like, I'm sad that we're not going to get that. Because that movie sounds like it could have been legendary.
Yeah, I mean, we really just have to wait like 20 years until Brian May and all of them die, and then we can get something good.
Hopefully Sacha Baron Cohen can still pull off the Queen look.
Yeah, exactly. How old is Sacha Baron Cohen? He's probably like like 40.
40s, yeah.
But he's pretty svelte. He looks, he's 47. Wow, he looks pretty good for 47.
He does look pretty good for 47. Damn.
Good genes. Good Israeli genes.
Mm-hmm. What is Rami Malek? Is he
he's Egyptian.
Indian? Oh, he's Egyptian. Okay.
Yeah. He is from Africa.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, all the like vague, weird racism against Freddie Mercury that they have for like literally two parts.
Yeah.
Like where they call him Packy.
Yeah. Two and people he's call like, him Packy. And it's like,
yeah. And I'm like, does he even look that much like he's from not like, the UK?
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe I'm just not racist enough, but I don't think I would ever look at someone like Freddie Mercury and be like, oh, he looks Pakistani. He looked like, I wouldn't even think he would look Middle Eastern at all.
Yeah, no, I feel like that's a, yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Like, I'm sure there was racism against him, especially like in the 70s and 80s. But I don't know. I feel like maybe they played it up a little bit in this movie, but I also wasn't alive at the time, so I can't really be that much of a judge on that aspect.
Yeah, it's, yeah, who knows? They're just,
yeah.
Movie's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I guess my like final thoughts are just, you know, as a flick, it gets the job done. As a film, really unremarkable besides for Rami Malek. Like if Rami Malek ends up becoming a huge Hollywood star, then this will be a milestone there. But other than that, I'd say like watch it on HBO when it comes on, but yeah. don't pay to see it really.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would say like even, like I wasn't upset when I walked out of the theater after seeing it at the Draft House. I was like, I actually felt like pretty decent about this movie. It's definitely not like an Oscar contender. And I think Queen and Freddie Mercury both deserve better. But I think that it was like directed slickly enough and Malek gives good enough of a performance that it's worth seeing. And also just, I think seeing those musical scenes in a theater is another aspect of the movie that I think is worth paying a full price ticket for, or at least a matinee ticket for.
Yeah. Yeah. IMAX or the Live Aid part was just a really cool thing to see in the theater. And I could see everybody kind of being affected by it.
Yeah.
And it was very compelling.
It just feels so good to be in that moment, because I think like most people in that theater probably like hadn't seen Live Aid in person. And if they did, they probably weren't that close to the stage. So this is probably the closest we're going to get to like a legitimate Queen performance again for a while.
That CGI was garbage though. It was so bad.
Oh yeah. All the crowd interactions and like oh my God, it looks so bad when they green screened like the band, like bowing in front of the crowd.
Yeah. Like, ooh, just focus on them, please.
I guess all the budget was gone by the time they filmed this. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure they were way over budget or something like that.
Yeah. But I mean, hey, it looks like they're going to make it back.
Oh yeah. Exactly. That's by far.
I agree. I think that as a film, it's fine. I think if you see it in theaters, you're not going to be too upset with paying full price for it. As a flick, you're going to be good seeing it in a theater. It's a great way to pass time. And again, just the fact that Queen's music is as good as it is, it's infectious, honestly.
Yeah.
Watching this movie, you feel like you want to just clap along. And you're going to want to listen to Queen on the car ride home. I guarantee it. But
yeah.
I think as a film, it's super subpar. Rami Malek, I think, is the best thing about this movie. I think Bryan Singer does have some slick direction. I think they're like, again, the movie looks really good. I think the set design, costume design is all pretty good. And I think there are some iconic shots in this film that would make a really good desktop wallpaper. But aside from that, this is not Walk the Line, you know?
Yeah, it's not Walk the Line. It's not Ray. It's not... Yeah.
There's no real drama here, and it like you said, it all feels very contrived.
Yeah.
But it's a good, it's a fan letter to Queen, and if that's what you're looking for in this movie, I think you're going to be happy with it.
Yeah. I guess, we're all still looking for the unauthorized biography of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, what I really wanted from this movie, like, could you imagine if Apple had creative control over the Danny Boyle, Steve Jobs movie? Like, that movie would be shit. That movie would have been the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs movie.
Yeah.
And this movie it's not as bad as the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs movie, but it's also not as good as the Danny Boyle Steve Jobs movie.
Yeah, exactly. All right. That's mostly everything I've got to say about that. You got any other final thoughts?
Yeah, if you need some time to kill, I think it's worth seeing, but we're getting better movies coming out pretty soon here, so.
Yeah, so really buckle up.
Yeah.
All right, well, what are we going to be seeing next week, Rob? It'll be our first live recording.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be so much fun. And this weekend, we are going to see Overlord.
Ooh, the Nazi zombie movie, which surprising how long it's taken us to get a Nazi zombie movie, considering Call of Duty, World at War.
We actually had some German Nazi zombie films that just didn't take off in America because most Americans don't speak German. But like Dead Snow, I think that came out back in like 2011 something.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I know. I've seen that on Netflix before.
Yeah, that's a hardcore Nazi zombie movie. Totally worth a watch, too, if you haven't seen it yet. I think this movie's going to be better, though. This movie's actually getting surprisingly good reviews. And the fact that they were screening it so early for critics shows that they clearly have faith in it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm excited to be in Austin with you, Rob.
Oh, yeah. We are also going to see a comedy show, a live riff of the first Transformers at the Draft House. And it's going to be great.
We should do a rewatchable too. Like we should watch a bad movie and just roast it. This would be a good segue into it.
Yes, we're going to do that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more off mic. But yeah, we'll have some good content for y'all.
We'll make some video content for you. We promise. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're literally just viewing angles on YouTube. You can find us pretty easily.
We're literally just viewing angles.
Just two angles talking about pop culture.
There's just two angles. Wouldn't the car win every time? Car versus man.
we gotta do so. Oh fuck! I wish we knew an animator so we could just do improv and have them animate it.
Oh, I know an animator, but he makes way more money than all of us, so we probably have to pay him.
Damn! What does he animate for? Fucking. Cartoon
He's
Network.
Got a YouTube channel. I'll rep it here. I was on we were on the same improv team in high school. His name is Brendan Blaber, and his YouTube is called Jello Apocalypse. He has a lot of good content. He animates all of his. He does well enough that he's probably making more money than like all of us. He hires like full time like voice actors and stuff like that.
Yeah, hot damn! He's got 1.4 million subs.
Yeah, I know, right? So this is basically Steven Universe. 6.3 million views. Yeah, so he does like, so this is basically, oh, wow, yeah, he's doing pretty good.
Woo. Can we get him on the show?
probably, yeah, I could ask him.
Yeah, what movies does he like?
Yeah, we do like an animation special and we get him on.
Dude, I am so down to talk about animation. I am going to just fucking gush about Adventure Time because... Oh my god, I'm on an Adventure Time wave right now.
Oh yeah, you're really gassing it up?
I'm gassing it up. I mean, I've been gassing it up for a while, but that show's fucking like 8 seasons long. There's like 50 episodes a season or something. I'm basically watching an anime right now, but better.
Well, yeah, and it's like every episode is only like 10 minutes or whatever,
yeah,
so it's
true.
It's super easy to watch.
Dude, Adventure Time is so fucking good. I can't even talk about how good it is right now, because I'm just going to go on for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I really just need to like cement myself and watch hours of content for it, because I'm still like I think I'm in season 3 or something. Like
it hasn't even gotten, have you seen, like, you haven't even seen when it shit starts getting real, when they start tackling themes like Alzheimer's.
Yeah, no, I have not gotten that kind of
dude,
stuff.
I love Adventure Time.
Yeah, I wonder what Brendan's top viewed video is. I wonder if I can sort by most popular. This is just a weird plug. It's Welcome to Tumblr. It has 12 million views.
I feel like I've actually seen that video at some point, too. That's crazy. Well, I can't believe you went to high school with this guy. That's super cool.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very nice guy. Very nice, wholesome dude. Always fun time.
We should totally have him on the show. I would love to talk animated movies with him. I want to see what an actual animator's take on animated movies are, because I want to know if my taste in animation is shit.
Oh, I bet it is.
No, I would not
you,
be.
Rob,
I
bet
be
you're
surprised.
Tasting that as shit.
But I want confirmation. That's all I'm asking for.
Oh yeah, we I'll get you that confirmation. Yeah.
Thanks, Daddy.
No problem, Papa Bear. All right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. We're both each other's dads. All right. Let's just end this podcast. Oh, Jesus Christ. All right. Well, this has been real fun, everybody. My name is Dan Leo. You can follow me on Twitter at the Dan Leo Show. You can also follow the podcast at Viewing Angles. And you know the website, it's called viewingangles podcast.com. whatever podcast service you're using, please subscribe, rate, follow, whatever it takes. You know what I mean. We're on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, the other ones. You know them.
We're Rob, in so many places. You? You can follow me at Robert Jr. JR. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd. And don't forget, we have merch now. So if you want some dope-ass looking t-shirts and you want people to ask you what the fuck is a viewing angle, check out the merch link. It's in the bio and also on our website.
The merch is pretty good. I was going to just lie to Rob and say that I ordered it, but I actually did. I've ordered a mug and a shirt. And I want the Brian, Williams complaint department.
It's a work in progress. I'm going to make that soon.
Yeah, Rob, your designs have been really good. I want it on the record that I'm saying that all this stuff looks way better than it would if I was doing it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad that it's going to be on the internet forever.
Ever and ever and ever. Yeah, I'm going to order a few t-shirts and I'm going to rip the sleeves off and work out of them.
Oh, dude, that's going to be so hot. When people see you fucking jacked, they're going to be like, oh, man, what supplement you taking? And you're like, I don't take supplements. I just listen to a podcast. It's called Viewing Angles.
Just listen to podcasts and creatine.
I'm listening to it right now as I'm working out.
Yeah, it's like, sometimes you don't have any headphones in. It's like, yeah, no, it's in my fucking brain.
Sometimes their takes are so bad, it just gets me fucking angry and I got to work out the rage.
Yeah, we should have a hot takes episode where we just... like our most controversial movie opinions.
We can do that in January when there are movies that neither of us really want to see.
Yeah, like, it's just
when the dumping grounds of Hollywood. We'll just do those episodes.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. All right, well, this has been us. We've had a great time. I'm so happy that you're all listening, and we love you. I don't think we say that enough. We love all of our listeners.
Yeah, we love you, viewing angels, but we'll love you more if you rate and subscribe.
Yeah, exactly. We already have 5 stars on most podcasts. We actually have like a decent amount of ratings. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. We know you love it. All right. Well, this has been us. We'll see. Yeah, buy our shit. we will see y'all next week. In the meantime...